Welcome back to the second half of our conversation with Steve Brown. In this part, Professor Brown talks a bit about some of his other projects, including his role in the formation of Review of Disability Studies, some of his other writing and current work, and he'll also talk a bit about what he's most excited about today. Before he jumps into that, he'll mention some recommended disability studies and disability culture texts that are good to have on your radar for those interested in disability studies and disability culture. Here's Steve Brown. You mentioned some works that were important for you. You mentioned Handicapping America. You mentioned your relationship with the Disability Rag. Are there a couple of key texts in general that you might mention that would be good for someone to have on their radar?
You know, Raphael, when I first started and I was looking for those books, they were kind of the only thing that was out there.
Yeah.
Now, they're coming out pretty much every day.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked at your syllabus, so I'm not sure what's on it. I know that lots of people have used, including myself in the past, Simulit Claiming Disability, I think it's called.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I mentioned, you know, I haven't read Judy's book. It's coming out in a week or two. It's, I'm sure, going to be a classic. The first, let me think about this in a kind of a different way. There's a really good book about disability culture by a lady named Petra Kuppers.
Yeah.
K-U-P-P-E-R-S, called Studying Disability Culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's called. And part of what I haven't said, but I think is important, is that when I first started talking about disability culture, I kind of did it like we're doing now, as a talking head,
mm-hmm.
With kind of my academic focus, because that's what I knew. And I got really quickly that that's not how to get people to understand what disability culture is.
Mm.
Then I started using examples. And there were quite a few of them then, and there's thousands probably now. So, you know, one of the people I used in the beginning was a guy named John Callahan,
mm-hmm.
who used to write and draw these amazing cartoons, and has this great autobiography, not the movie, which I think sucked, but his book, which was Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, which is based on cartoons. There's a really good book, I think, out right now called Haben, which is about Haben Girma, who's the first deaf-blind student to graduate from Harvard Law School,
mm-hmm.
and now an international speaker. And I know she came to Hawaii. I don't know if people had a chance to see her at that point. I think her book's pretty interesting. What else would I think about? Well, from a history standpoint, and from a U.S. history standpoint, I still think the best book, M. Nielsen's Disability History of the U.S.
Yeah.
There is a book from the University of Illinois called Disability Histories,
mm-hmm.
which is anthology. I'm kind of looking at my bookshelf trying to think if... Oh, I should say, I've done a couple of blogs.
Yeah.
Disability books, disability rights books in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Was in 2015 when we were celebrating the 25th anniversary of the signing of the ADA, and that's on our website. Another one was in the blog of a woman named Mariah Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little after I did the other one. I might have done two for her. So, you know, those are good ways to actually find books.
I wanted to ask you a little bit, if you could mention a little bit about RDS and the history of RDS and your relationship with it and its goals.
Sure. So, well, at the time we started RDS, so there were, let's see, it was started by David Pfeiffer, who's actually the person who got us to Hawaii. Lillian, my wife, and I Megan Conway, and Bob Stodden, who was the director. And we, David actually, so David Pfeiffer had retired from Suffolk University, where he was a professor focused on public administration and political science. He was pretty well known in those days. He also was the editor of Disability Studies Quarterly, which was one of the journals out at the time, and had been started actually by this great guy named Irv Zola, who was a sociologist at Brandeis, and also has books that are pretty interesting that are out, or passed away in the 90s. Anyway, so in 2003, we were probably sitting around and at a conference, and David was thinking of starting a new journey. He had some things he wanted to do that he wasn't being able to do through DSQ, Disability Studies Quarterly. And Megan and I were fairly new to CDS and kind of wanting to see what we might be able to create. Bob was really open to whatever his staff had to present to him. And David, though he was retired, he was working with CDS, and he was had a disability, and he was bringing a disability advocacy, disability rights perspective to CDS that maybe it hadn't had before. And anyway, so we all decided that we'd create this journal, and we called it Review of Disability Studies and International Journal. And before the first issue came out, David passed away, quite unexpected. So the first journal has some dedication to him, but this is what we wanted when we started RDS. First of all, we wanted it to be an international journal. That's pretty clear from the title. We wanted a journal that would be open to students and to having those of us who were the editors, which at that point was primarily Megan and I after David passed. And we wanted to be able to mentor students. So we were facilitating research papers in our classes, and a number of those did get published. And that was kind of our focus. And in the beginning, of course, we were looking at our own specialties and interests, because you had to start somewhere. So the first issue had a lot of focus on disability culture. We also wanted to do guest editors, and that worked out better sometimes than others. But what we realized really quickly was there are a lot of people out there that wanted to publish articles. But we also wanted to do peer-reviewed articles. We wanted it to be a peer-reviewed journal, but we also wanted, because we were really well aware that not everybody who wrote about disability came from a scholarly background.
Yeah.
So we also wanted to open it to other kinds of writing. It really didn't have, in the beginning, a whole lot of boundaries to it. We wanted it to be free, and it was in the beginning, and it wasn't, and I think it is again, so it's gone through some changes that way. That's, unless you have other specific questions, that's probably what I can say.
Yeah.
Oh, and one other thing is we did in the early, well, as long as I was there as editor, we did a lot of book reviews. And music reviews. We did a lot of reviews.
Yeah.
And I stayed a reviews editor until I retired, so.
I wanted to ask a little bit about just your current focuses. We've talked a lot about initiatives. There's many initiatives that we didn't talk about. We talked about a lot of your writing and your work with your most recent book on for young people on Ed Roberts too,
right?
Well, maybe we could start there about the importance of why you frame that for young readers and how that fits into your advocacy.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's partly accidental that it happened, and partly not. So, in 1991, I believe, when I had just started working at Good on Disability, which is a public policy institute in the Berkeley-Oakland area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to a conference in Arkansas, actually, in Little Rock, and I was going to be talking about part of my story that we haven't talked about at all, and that's okay. But I also, at that point, was really aware that disability culture was where I wanted to eventually move into, and was looking at various ways of doing that. And like I said, I was thinking, learning that I had to do this by example.
Mm-hmm.
As a writer, the easiest way for me to do that was to write. So I wrote a poem, and the poem was called Tell Your Story. And I still use that poem, actually. One of the stanzas in the poem talks, I think I'm quoting this accurately, but if not, it's close. And this is also on our website. One of the stanzas was, how will our children learn to dare and compare if we don't show that we care?
Mm-hmm.
And basically showing, you know, what we've been doing. And that, remember, that's 91.
Yeah.
So now, at that point, I was a parent of a teenager. Now I'm a grandparent of a couple of kids.
Wow.
So, you know, still quite relevant for me.
Yeah.
So I will all, from the very beginning, I've really been aware of mentoring people younger than me.
Yeah.
And in the 2000s, the early, well, 1990s, I guess, and we were living in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I was actually doing more things kind of as a writer and poet when we were there than I was as a disability advocate, but in some cases, they came together. So I was doing, I don't remember quite how this happened, but I was doing a week at a middle school where the focus was on Ed. And when Ed passed away in 95, I really wanted to write a biography of him. I actually got some funding for a year to do some research, but it's the kind of biography longer than a year, and the funding dried out. But one of the things that I did with the information I had, one thing was I wrote an article that was published in Disability Studies Disability Studies Quarterly about Ed and his mother, Zona,
mm-hmm.
who's 100 in a couple of months.
Wow.
And the force of nature herself, just like Ed was. And so I took a lot of what I did and I put it into a story for kids, a biography for kids. And I also had this experience at this middle school in Las Cruces where people were fascinated by it. So I actually wrote the bulk of what became Ed Roberts' Wheelchair Genius, a book I published in 2015. I actually wrote that a long time ago, but I couldn't get any publishers interested. In fact, I mean, it's not even that they rejected the manuscript. They had no interest in seeing it.
Wow.
And that shows somewhat of a difference between those days and today. And so I put that CD, and I offered it to people who were interested in it. And some few people were, but not too many. Then around 2013-14, a woman named Diana Astora Carson published a book about Ed, kind of geared to really young students. He's a kindergarten teacher,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Ed Roberts' Disability Rights, and it's narrative and pictures by a wonderful artist who's also passed, Patrick William Connolly, who knew Ed really well and was a great artist and has a lot of his art in the book. And I didn't know I knew her a little bit from email, but not really well. But I connected with her and I said, you know, I was really glad that she did this. And I had this manuscript, but I told her, you know, I hadn't done much with it. And she's the one actually who really encouraged me to get it out as a book, even though she had one out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's geared a little bit for older writers. I mean, older readers.
Right.
Middle school. So that's how that came about. Is that the end of that question about Ed?
I was just, yeah, that is. Did you want to say anything about the creation of the Institute on Disability Culture?
Yeah, so let me just say two other things. I'll try and be brief. One is I am very slowly working on a book about disability culture right now. It's in a very early stage. I have a draft, but that's what it is. It's a draft, an early draft. And in 92, 93, I guess, when we knew Lillian, who I met when we were in California, and we got married, and she had done a lot of international work, and she was really interested in disability culture and got it right from the beginning, which many people didn't. So we moved to Las Cruces. At the time we were getting ready to do that, I also applied for some funding to write to do some research, not even to write, to do some research on disability culture, and that got funded. So I had a fellowship for a year.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that year, I knew I had to do a report, but I didn't know what that entailed. There wasn't any guidance for it. So I talked to my project officer, and he said, well, it can be a few pages. You don't have to do much. It can be anything you want. But I had this stuff bubbling in me. And so I sat down and I wrote Investigating a Culture of Disability.
Right.
A report. And that's why it's final report in the title. And it was, first of all, it was the first federal funding that I know of to do any research on disability culture.
Mm.
I did the first section, kind of a historical, it was not kind of, it was a historical section, which is in some ways pretty outdated right now, except as a history of its own, because you could see where somebody was at that point. And then I interviewed several people, including Cheryl Marie Wade, who did many things, but one of the things she did was an article which became a video called Disability Culture, RAP. Disability Culture Rap.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a really good, especially the video is a good way to access disability culture these days. She's also passed on. But there were kind of a group of us in the early to mid-90s who were getting funding. She was a performance artist, and she got funding from the National Endowment of the Arts, I think, to do solo performances.
Yeah.
So all this stuff was happening, including the creation of the Institute. And when we created the Institute, we came up with a vision, purpose, mission statement that actually we still use. It's promoting pride in the history, activities, and cultural identity of individuals with disabilities throughout the world. But that's been our mission, vision, purpose statement since 1994 when we officially incorporated. And I still use that guide for everything I do. I think it fits as a guide for everything
mm-hmm.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I'll say about that is it's really simple to find. It's instituteondisabilityculture.org. And I think that's enough.
Okay. Thank you. But I wanted to say, you'd mentioned in a lot of your work, both with RDS and just more generally for yourself as a scholar, how important it has been for you to reach out and mentor younger scholars and help encourage their work. And I have to tell you that I consider myself quite lucky to have experienced that with you and your early encouragement in my own work and my formation of the film and disability course, and your interest in things I've done, and being able to kind of carry the flame a little bit of these courses you've developed has been a real honor for me that I'm really appreciative of, and thank you for your mentorship of me too. Thank you.
Thanks, I appreciate that, and. And I really appreciate that you're keeping these classes going.
Well, I'm honored to do it. Is there anything else that you want to mention about? We kind of hopped around a lot, and we didn't talk about movie stars and sensuous scars,
right.
Or surprised to be standing. Are there anything that you want to mention about current things that are getting you excited or immediate focuses now that you want to mention?
Yeah. So I I would say the things that have gotten me excited in, let's say, the last 5 years or so, maybe a little longer, and currently, are the amazing activism and work of a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. Way too grinding right now. But Haben is an example of one.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also an example of something else, which is she's originally from Eritrea, from Ethiopia, near Ethiopia.
Wow.
So she's in. The international activities that are going on now are amazing. You know, when we first started, just one little anecdote, and then that'll be enough. We started a catalog called the Next Renaissance, a catalog of disability culture or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we put out 2 issues. This was in the early 90s, and we had all kinds of different people in there. We had books, we had music, we had, I guess at this point they'd be cultural artifacts, but in that point they were people creating things. Like, for example, there was a woman in Las Cruces who created various kinds of drag. So we asked her if she'd create a dragon using a wheelchair and a blind dragon, and she did that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and all kinds of stuff. But after 2 issues, we were done. And we were done for 2 reasons. One was it was a lot of work that we didn't really have the capacity to do. But even more importantly, when we started, as it was a way for people to get their work out. But by the end of the 2nd issue, there was not such a need for that because the World Wide Web had developed, the internet had developed.
Right, right.
People had their own websites, and they were able to get their own websites, I mean, their own work out by themselves. So the technology of the last, 30 years, let's say, has been really amazing. And I said that I'm working on a book about disability culture. In the early days, it would have been what to include. This time, it's what to exclude, because there's so much
mm-hmm.
out there. So I'm excited about all of it.
Awesome.
I'm fairly accessible by email. And if somebody has questions, they can email me, and they can get my email from you, I'm sure.
That's awesome. Steve, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us. Introducing some important ways of thinking about disability culture and walking us through a bit of your own journey too, and some of the things that are keeping your fire going right now too. And again, thank you, and we're all enjoying getting to walk in the path that you created for us. Thank you again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was our conversation with Steve Brown. Thank you all again for your active participation in this course. It would not exist without your voices. Thank you again to Steve Brown for this recent conversation with him and for the help in creating the path that we've been sharing together this term. I look forward to your last module responses and your responses to this podcast that you can also do as a voice message on the Anchor site where you're accessing this podcast. And I look forward to your final projects. Bye for now.